From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Campaign season is in full swing. Candidates are traveling the state, and if you watch TV, you're probably already seeing ads. At issue this year are elections for governor and other statewide officers, a U.S. senator, every seat in the U.S. House, the entire Illinois General Assembly, and a couple seats on the Illinois Supreme Court. As we go to air on Wednesday, we are 55 days away from the election. We're also just 37 days away from the home opener for the Chicago Blackhawks. Both of those dates are important to my first guest today, but we're only going to be talking about one of them. Rick Pearson is political reporter at the Chicago Tribune. Rick, always good to talk politics with you. Welcome back.
Thank you, Brian. And I think you must know I'm wearing my Blackhawks hoodie today. So
I assume you're always wearing it, basically. All right. So let's start with a story you filed yesterday about Republican gubernatorial nominee and state senator Darren Bailey. This one was about him basically saying he's open to changing a state law around Israel. What's going on there?
Well, this is a law that was passed in 2015. Under Bruce Rauner, which was passed without opposition by the General Assembly. And it basically said that the state's public employee pension systems could not invest in firms that were boycotting Israel over Israel's actions in the Middle East involving Palestine. And Bailey appeared at a Palestinian organization in the south suburbs of Chicago on Saturday. And as he spoke, it was in front of a map where Israel was the country of Israel did not exist on this map. It was basically the whole area was labeled as Palestine. And Bailey was asked about this law. It's known as anti-BDS, and a number of other states have similar laws. And he was asked about whether this law was constitutional and would he seek to repeal it, which is something that many Palestinian groups, and including even some more liberal Jewish organizations, have asked for. And Bailey said that he was open to it, and then went on to blame this as an example of Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker's overriding of the Constitution. Well, as I said, one, this was passed during the Pritzker's predecessor, one-term Republican Governor Bruce Rauner. And two, I think it's also shows Bailey weighing in on the longstanding Middle East controversies involving Israel and Palestine at a time when he's already been under fire from Jewish organizations for his attempts to try to compare the Holocaust to abortion and the outcry that that provoked. And now he wades into another controversy involving the Jewish community. And of course, this is all heightened by the fact that J.B. Pritzker is Jewish.
Yeah. And this, and you mentioned BDS in there, and I can't remember if you said the full word. I think it's boycott, divestment, and sanctions, right? This is groups that want to boycott Israel or withdraw, invest, divest from Israel, and ultimately sanction them for what they see as the mistreatment of the Palestinian people. It's interesting we're talking about foreign policy in a gubernatorial campaign, right? But I guess, yeah, go ahead.
No, I mean, and it's like this didn't seem to be necessarily a thing that needed to be waded into. And the fact, you know, and the we talked to some people who were there at the event. We were at the event and they were happy that, you know, that Bailey had shown up, but really, this is far beyond the Illinois race for governor. And I think it just shows an example of him trying to reach out to try to get any votes he can, given the fact that he doesn't have really much money. He doesn't have any advertising on TV, and he has to find a way to try to grow a base of support to be competitive with Pritzker.
Well, and what I was interested in this as well is because this comes in the context of Bailey's decision to really center his campaign on his religion. And you recently had a very interesting story on that. Say more about that choice he's made.
Well, I almost on a daily basis, Bailey goes onto Facebook Live and posts a video in which he offers a daily devotion. He talks about his he talks about the campaign, but then he reads out of a book of daily devotions and then offers up a personal prayer. And in some of these prayers, it's kind of stunning and asking God's help to have the people rise up and unite to remove J.B. Pritzker from office. And the thing I found interesting is there's no doubt that he is very much God-centered. And I've never seen a candidate in decades who really wore their religion on their sleeve the way he does, including, you know, there's a Bible verse, a passage reference posted on the bus doors of his campaign bus. He goes into campaign events, and rather than offering, the kind of campaign spiel and rhetoric, it starts with a prayer. And, you know, it's very much representative of the region that he comes from and that kind of Christian evangelical charismatic church that exists in many rural areas. But he brings it to a fore as part of the active part of his campaign for governor. And, you know, we're seeing at a time with rulings from the U.S. Supreme Court with its new conservative majority, that line of separation of powers kind of being eroded, the traditional separation of church and state. And now you have Bailey saying the churches need to wake up and basically become more politically active, that the churches need to do a bigger role in taking care of the support services in government. But his bottom line to everything is, if you have a problem, if you have a physical ailment, if you have any kind of financial troubles or foreclosures, you should follow his path, lay them at the feet of the Lord, and trust in him.
You mentioned the Bible verse on the door of his bus. I think it's Ephesians chapter 6, verses 10 through 19. I looked this up. Part of it says, "Put on the full armor of God so that you can take your stand against the devil's scheme. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms." I mean, you touched on this a little. You've been covering, just so maybe listeners aren't familiar, you've been covering Illinois politics since, what, the Thompson administration? Have you ever seen a campaign take this tack to this degree?
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, and you know, churches are a part of politics, and, you know, the roots of the civil rights era rooted in Black churches. And to this day, you have candidates who routinely in the Chicago area go and stump in Black churches. But that's just kind of the routine of how you campaign. This is an entirely different kind of campaign where it is being led as kind of I think even Bailey referenced it as kind of a missionary field, which is a religious term of going out and spreading the gospel. And it's the gospel of Bailey. And the question becomes, is this about trying to create a theocracy or move forward with a democracy? And when he was asked about, you know, do you think your proselytizing is turning some people off? He said that he wasn't proselytizing, that he was just giving his view of the word of God that he believes is the truth, and people are free to accept it or not accept it.
Interesting. And let me just take a moment to remind listeners, this is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Rick Pearson, political reporter at the Chicago Tribune, about what's been happening in the Illinois political scene. Particularly, we've been focusing on the race for governor. Before we move off of State Senator Bailey, Republican nominee Bailey, and his religion, and you touched on this a little bit in that you mentioned, you know, if you have problems, lay them at the feet of the Lord. We know he and his wife founded a Christian school near his farm in downstate Illinois. What are the policy implications for this if Bailey is elected governor?
Well, that isn't really clear. And it's much like a lot of Bailey's campaign rhetoric, is that there really are no defined plans to deal with what he considers the problems. And of course, we know of issues of crime, and his one response to that is repeal the Safety Act, which is not going to happen in the General Assembly.
And also, a lot of it hasn't even gone into effect yet, right?
Correct. He wants to, repeal the ban on the lifting of the public notification of abortion for minors and taxpayer funding for abortion. He wants to do away with that. That's not likely to happen in the climate of the General Assembly. And he's even modified his opposition to abortion rhetoric by saying, well, look at the General Assembly, nothing's going to change here in Illinois, as he tries to divert from his own beliefs, which is he's opposed to abortion, with the only exception being the life of the mother. So when he talks about, these policy implications, really his answer to everything seems to be, well, we'll all sit down at a table and work together and try to figure out something. And that pretty much sums up things about dealing with DCFS, to immigration, to all, you name it, pension problems. It all comes down to, well, we'll all sit at a table and try and figure something out.
Before we move off of Bailey, I do want to also note that it came out yesterday that he has been living in Chicago in the John Hancock building, apparently, at least according to what I read in the Sun-Times, so he can, quote, immerse himself in the city. Maybe just for our listeners who might not be as familiar with Chicago geography, what is the Hancock Center? What is that part of the city like?
Well, that is on the Magnificent Mile, 900 North Michigan Avenue. So that is spark right into the kind of high rent, high retail district of Chicago.
Is there still a Cheesecake Factory on the ground floor?
And there's a Cheesecake Factory on the ground floor. There used to be a Best Buy store on the ground floor, but it's definitely high end. And I kind of, when I heard this, I was flashing back to when the late Jane Byrne, as mayor, moved into Cabrini Green to try to show solidarity with residents there who were plagued by crime. And while there are and have been some high profile incidents of crime activity in River North and the kind of these upscale neighborhoods, John Hancock Building is not exactly where the root of the location of all of these criminal elements and activities are going in the city of Chicago.
And he doubled down, or I guess, what are we on, pentupled down on his description of Chicago as a hellhole at this point, and he misstated some crime statistics. Republican candidates for governor have tried to appeal to Chicago voters. I remember Bruce Rauner working to get the support of several African-American church and business and community leaders. Do you see any evidence that Bailey's strategy is working?
Only among a small group of mainly the who you would expect to be kind of the firefighters, law enforcement, police on the northwest side, Edson Park, some down in the south city. But really, as far as any kind of expansive support, no. And you're right that past governors knew you had to kind of try to get about 20% of the city vote to be competitive statewide against the Democratic vote totals in Chicago. And there's not a lot of evidence. He's doing parades. He gets mixed greetings there at the parades and things like that, but nothing of any kind of organized effort to try to do anything in Chicago, except apparently try to get poll watchers for election day to counter what he views as high-risk districts vulnerable to vote fraud.
We have to take a break in a little less than 2 minutes, but we've been talking so much about Bailey. What has Governor J.B. Pritzker been up to in the campaign?
Well, it's kind of interesting, and I've told people this, and of course, we've all been speculating about, does he have a real interest in being president by virtue of his trips out east and New Hampshire and Maine and Florida? And I really think It's the fact that this is what he thinks of Bailey as a competitor, that if this was truly a highly competitive race in his view, there's no way he would have done any of those things. And that the Bailey does not constitute a real threat to him, and it frees him up to be able to do extraneous things that you wouldn't find a candidate do in a very competitive situation.
Interesting. All right, we're going to continue our conversation with Rick Pearson. We want to invite you to join us. If you have questions about state politics, what are you seeing out there? Are you getting tired of TV ads already? If you watch local TV, 800-222-9455 is the number to join our conversation. That's 800-222-9455. We're going to continue talking about state politics as well as some very interesting political ads, both on TV as well as some mailers made to look like newspapers that are attacking that criminal justice law we referred to earlier, and attacking Democrats for it, I should say. More with Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune when we return. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about state politics today with Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation. That's 800-222-9455. Or you can always tweet us in real time at 21st Show. That's at 21ST Show. All right, Rick, I want to turn now to some political ads, some very specific and interesting political advertisements, some of which are made to look like newspapers. Talk about what's happening there.
Well, in the last few weeks, I would say mailboxes basically in areas around the state, including in Chicago and in the suburbs, have been receiving political mailings made to resemble newspapers with phony titles like Chicago City Wire and things like that, that are basically attack ad mailings at Democrats, and there's no disclaimer on them.
When you say made to look like newspapers, I mean, they're the same sort of that flimsier paper, that kind of gray paper, right?
Yeah, they're laid out like a newspaper. And with multiple pages to it. This is the work of an outfit called Local Government Information Service, which was launched several years ago by Dan Proft, who is a right-wing radio host in Chicago, living in Naples, Florida, who in a seven-way Republican race for the Republican nomination for governor in 2010, finished sixth. Proft has been a political operative for quite some time, running various political action committees, basically funded by Richard Uihlein. Uihlein is the founder of Uihlein Office Supply and Packaging, a billionaire who is also a mega donor to very conservative Republican causes. And Uihlein has given Proft millions of dollars over the years, and in this latest effort is I believe somewhere around $10 million, if not more. And you're seeing the fruits of that in these newspaper like ad mailings, as well as TV commercials under the guise of a pack called the People Who Play by the Rules.
And maybe we don't have to get too deep into the content here, but some of these are focused on this SAFETY Act, this big criminal justice set of changes in law. A lot of that focuses on an upcoming change in the state's bail policy. The state is eliminating cash bail. And as I understand it, judges have to consider whether to release someone on an individual basis. And it doesn't, you know, it could even be for serious crimes. There's no requirement that they have to release people, but they're just told to do it on an individual basis. But that's not the message that's coming across in these ads.
No, the message, and this is, and I should say that Kraft is doing this in support of Bailey, and Bailey's big message has been also about the Safety Act and the pretrial fairness policies. And they're basically saying that come January 1st, when this law takes effect, the jail and prison doors are going to fly open, and all of these people are going to come flooding out to your suburbs. And one of the overt messages in these Kraft mailings has been highlighting people who have been charged, not convicted, but are awaiting trial, that are in jails, who are people of color, and warning that these people are going to be coming into your neighborhoods come January 1, and giving a list of non-detainable offenses. Well, there's no such thing as a non-detainable offense. But Brian, you hit the heart of the matter, and this is what advocates, I think, have done a poor job pushing, is that bail becomes a much more intense situation of not bail, but detaining someone becomes a much more intense situation. And that there will still be, you know, bail for violent crimes, but that you have a lot of state's attorneys who oppose this. And I think in part because they're elected officials. And if they don't fight to keep some of these people detained and they go out and commit other crimes, I think they're going to end up wearing the jacket for it in future political campaigns. So I think that's where you're seeing this puts an onus on really the state's attorneys, much more so than judges who only face retention, about having to screen and look at these individuals on an individualized basis, rather than just having people flushed through bond court and a judge stamping a bail number to their alleged crime.
You know, I think a key part of this story, and I'll tell listeners, we're going to come back to this. We will be in future programs. We'll take a deeper look at the Safety Act and some of the misinformation that's out there about it, as well as these, you know, sort of fake newspapers. There are also this network of fake news websites that if you click on them, it certainly looks like a legitimate news site. They have names like Sun and Post and things like that, you know, the sort of traditional newspaper names. Do you see this as possible if there had not been this collapse of local news in the past couple of decades?
I think you're absolutely right that this is an attempt to take advantage of the lack of local news reporting. And, you know, these days people have a hard time telling, you know, what's real and what's fake. I mean, I kind of find it interesting that it's a Republican operative that's pushing out fake newspapers, given the efforts by Republicans from Trump and others to label everything they don't like as fake news. But yeah, it's a network that's designed to try to take advantage of the kind of collapse of the local news market. And, you know, it, as far as a business ploy, it's very clever. But as far as journalism, it really hurts the profession.
Yeah, it hurts. Kind of hurts my soul to look at some of these things that look like newspapers that are really just attack ads and another guy's. Last question. What are you going to be watching for next? What is the next big thing to come as we are heading? I mean, I mentioned it's just under 8 weeks until Election Day, but really it's election season now, and it's just 2 weeks until early voting begins.
Yeah, and I have to tell you, and you know, right before we came on, Governor Pritzker issued a disaster proclamation over the asylum seekers that Texas Governor Abbott has been sending by the busloads to Chicago, and having 75 National Guardsmen put on work to for logistics purposes. And I think now we're seeing this kind of national issue of immigration and border policy now is going to be creeping into the Illinois governor's race. And while Illinois is a sanctuary state and that's not going to change, I think it's certainly something that we're likely to see Republicans play up even more in their opposition to the border policies of the Biden administration, and throwing that into the sanctuary policies of J.B. Pritzker.
Well, I'm sure that is something we will continue to talk more about, as I know you and your colleagues will be covering it. Rick Pearson is political reporter at the Chicago Tribune. Rick, thanks so much for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you as always, Brian.